Our show's name pays tribute to the Boer Trekkers of South Africa, who in 1838 soundly defeated 30,000 Zulus on the bank of the Nkomo River, thereafter called Blood River, from the water turning red with the blood of the slain. Miraculously, no Boer Trekker died and only three were wounded. Now, your friend, Eddie Miller, will be your ambassador for tonight's show.
Dear precious Blood River Radio family, thank you so much for tuning in tonight. Thank you for hanging on. I know y'all got a real treat. Second hour, we had the one and only Sam Dixon on. Man, that guy, whew, I can't touch his intellect. He is something else, I'm telling you. He knows those dates, the battles of, you know, the Mongols versus the Russians, etc. But there's one thing I meant to tell him, and I forgot. The first time I met Sam Dixon was in 2007. I went over there, and they had a Council of Conservative meeting in what they call the Quad City of Muscle Shoals, Tuscumbia, Sheffield, and Florence, Alabama. And Sam was up speaking, and someone asked Sam, would the white people, would white men, white Southern men especially, ever get the courage to stand up, get back in the government, get in the streets, get and do whatever it took. Whatever it's going to take to get this country back. Will that ever happen? I'll never forget Sam said. He said that, yeah, it will happen when their children, white men's children, their bellies are swelling up from starvation. Like if you used to see these old advertisements on TV years ago, when you're always wanting to send money to Africa, we have these endless kids. You know, those Africans will be starving to death, but somehow they find a way to breed out one more black child. He said, when their bellies are swelling like those black children, then, and when they've lost everything, he said, when a white man loses everything, he loses it. And then he prefaced that a comment when he said that once they lose everything, if they wait too long, if they get too broke, too beaten down, too weak from starvation, probably never be able to come back. Anyway, I meant to say that to Sam before he left. But now, you know what? We're going to the still bitter ender and little sister Braveheart. I'm putting this thing on cruise control. Get me some chocolate. Get me some coffee. And they're going to do all the work this third hour. I'm just going to listen to them and have a good time like y'all are. So anyway, hey, the bitter ender is back after being gone a while. The still bitter ender. How you doing tonight, bitter ender? Yeah.
Bitter as usual. I'm not even going to talk. I'm going to hang up. I'm so bitter. Good to hear from you, Eddie. And great to be on with Monica. She is certainly one of my heroines of this century, and just a super lady, very courageous. And I'm so looking forward to whatever subject she wants to cover this evening. I'll just back out of the way and let her kick off the last hour.
How are you doing tonight, Sister Braveheart? Well, tell the brethren out there hello any way you want to. You can speak as a Dutch if you want to. Doesn't matter.
Oh, yeah. Okay, I could do that. Actually, there'd be a surprisingly large number of people who would actually understand. I understand there are many, many German people in the United States, as there are in Canada, or people from Germany, you know, like... Lots of German people came over to this continent over the last century. So, yeah, that wouldn't put too many people off. But anyway, yeah, greetings to you. And it's a real pleasure for me also to be on with you, Jean. And I'm looking forward to this hour. I do have one thing in front of me here that I could bring in onto the table. If that's all right. And it's a letter that I just received 2 days ago, I think it was, from Leslie Borey. And we have mentioned about Leslie Borey's situation, was it last week or 2 weeks ago? This is this man who has been in prison in Canada since February. And I didn't know about it until just a few weeks ago, so I immediately wrote him a letter, and he wrote back, and this is a very powerful letter. So is that a good place to start? Shall I read some of his letter?
Oh, yes, ma'am. Go for it.
Okay, yes, and then I'll pause for comments, or jump in at any time to make a comment. I would like that, actually, because it could be a jumping off point for us. So first he, you know, he thanks me for my letter, and then he goes on to say, okay, well, you were, this is his words now, he's telling me, you were in jail for a brief video apologizing for acting on a false belief about world history. I am in here for 2 hours or more of video exposing hoaxers and their desire to murder all non-J-dogs with COVID vaccines and extreme poverty through financial control. I named their bald-headed 33-degree helpers and the police who used brutal violence to enforce COVID measures, which included wearing non-medicinal masks to sell this theatrical production of fake COVID to the naive public. In prison, I learned that a lockdown means that you have to stay in your cell and you're not permitted to walk around a larger containment area known as a range. In fact, Canada was turned into a prison where all people were told to stay in their cells, and this was enforced by brutal police violence that included deadly force to enforce wearing a non-medical mask. A police officer told me that he was not political, which means that they would shoot your children if someone who paid them told them it was for a good reason, despite a lack of scientific evidence to justify the order. This is more than scary. It is our reality. People feared the corrupt police outside of their homes for far more than the fake COVID. This is true, don't you think? Do you want to jump in and comment? That was page one out of a four-page letter.
Go ahead, Gene.
No, that sounds like exactly what's going on in this country, where the political party in power is using our judicial system and our FBI fumbling, bumbling idiots to go after their political opponents. And, you know, it won't be long until they start going after just the ordinary citizens. Right now, it's people that are, they're afraid, scared to death that these people are going to run for office, and they know they have nothing to offer the American people, so they have to eliminate their opposition. And that's what they're doing here. And it's just through intimidation, and they're trying to tell people, you know, if we can get Donald Trump locked up and keep bankrupt him with one trial after another, one accusation after another, think what we could do with Joe Schmo down on the corner that just has a little business that he's trying to run, or her, or what they're trying to do. If the government can do that to a big name person with a heavy bankroll, what can they do to us? So it's intimidation in Canada and in this country, and I've heard people in Australia saying basically the same thing, that the government has just gone absolutely berserk with this power. And whatever
and
the excuse, go ahead.
They have the police to enforce the government's orders or crazy laws or whatever blots of toner on paper that they put. The police are always protecting those laws and the government, and we know that the government is actually a criminal cabal. They are they are organized crime right there. It happens to be called government.
But okay. It's the biggest crime syndicate in the world.
Exactly.
Based in Washington, D.C.
Yeah. So I'm going to continue with this
in Tel Aviv.
letter. Go ahead, sorry.
I just said in Tel Aviv.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, well.
Sorry to interrupt you. Right.
One and the same.
Yes.
One and the same.
Exactly. So just keep in mind that the letter I'm reading is from a political prisoner. And what does that actually mean? It means somebody who is in jail because he has views which oppose the political regime, or he has opinions, or has expressed in words things that he is, you know, not allowed to express in our so free country. So anyway, continuing his letter from Leslie Borey. They brought a SWAT team to arrest me after a day's work. I had a rifle pointed at me with a scumbag yelling conflicting instructions at me. In the middle of this stupidity, I loudly called out to a co-worker that I called it, which I did, when I predicted that I would be arrested for being outspoken about corruption someday. The second clown out of the SWAT van brought a dog with him. It was a stupid scene where my theory about violence being authority was proven. They used more violence than I did, and they had authority over me. I had a set of keys in one hand and a lunch bag in the other. They had rifles, pistols, a dog, and a lot of corrupt help. It is obvious why the communist J-dogs want to take the guns away from people. Right now, people are in a position to bring to justice those who tried to murder them with vaccines and poverty, all created by communists to reduce the world's population and enslave the survivors of the world's worst and most deadly hate crime. Period. A lack of organization is holding back the Canadian people who know that they were lied to and poisoned if they were vaccinated. The hoaxers do not want an honest politician like me to connect the dots for people. I'm going to just put in my own commentary here about a couple of things. So Leslie Borey refers to himself as a politician. Now, he did run. Whoops, I hear the music, so I guess we'll come back after the break and I'll carry on from there. Thanks.
Well, dear Blood River Radio family, you heard Sister Braveheart. She said we're going to a break, so we're going to a break. Be right back, folks.
Introducing PrepStartsNow.com, your ultimate guide to readiness and peace of mind. We offer practical preparedness tools, training, and education to take your family's household readiness to the next level. Browse the prep shop for essential products, check out our planning guides, and stay informed with our prep blog. Visit PrepStartsNow.com and subscribe to our emails for exclusive offers, new products, and future events. Remember, preparedness begins with PrepStartsNow.com.
Hello, friends. This is Jacob from Blood River Radio. We call the kings into account and tell the truth to shame the devil on this show every week because we are of the firm conviction that our cause cannot succeed without true revival amongst the remnant, amongst that principled minority of the dispossessed majority. Now is the time to stand and be counted, to do like Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who would not bow down to the false idols of their day, even under pain of death. Like the 300 mighty men of valor who surrounded the Midianites with Gideon, or the 7,000 men that God told the prophet Elijah had not bowed their knees to Baal in a time when even calling fire down from heaven would not awaken our kinsmen from their slumber. If you are encouraged by our labors in the trenches for the kingdom and the cause of truth, liberty, and righteousness, I urge you to consider supporting this program. No donation is too small. We can do with thousands or even hundreds what our enemies and the powers and the principalities of this present darkness need tens of millions to do. So please donate today at BloodRiverRadio.com and help us take up the hedge and stand in the gap against the great evils of our time.
Former Sheriff Richard Mack recounts in his book, The Proper Role of Law Enforcement, how he came to realize while working as a beat cop how wrong the all-too-common orientation of police officers is when they think of their job as being to write tickets and arrest people. Richard Mack tells of his personal transformation from by-the-number cop to constitution-conscious defender of citizen safety and freedoms. Learn what it really means to serve and protect. Purchase your copy at CSPOA.org. That's CSPOA.org.
Dear Blood River Radio family, thank you so much. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for hanging out. And I'd just like to remind y'all one more time that we dedicated this program tonight to three guys who used to be on. They started the program with us. I'll make sure that everybody knows we are dedicating it to them. Matt Goodwin, he was the original. He was one of the original co-hosts. Jacob Tyler came on after a while. He took the duties of just the webmaster. But Lee Cochran. Lee Cochran's passed. He died back in the last week of October. Matt got married, has other responsibilities. Jacob's, he's down in South America. But I'd like to salute those guys. Without them, we wouldn't have made it. In the beginning, it was primarily Matt and Lee and myself. We financed the show out of our own pocket. And thank God now we have we have people that tune in that send us money and help us out. And because we couldn't continue to do it without that. We could have never gone a third to 3 hours without that. That's for sure. I'd like to a few people to honor those people I just mentioned. Another quick comment. I'd like to read this text message I got just quickly from Sam. I said, Sam, God bless you, brother. You absolutely made the broadcast and made my day. You made that first part of the show. He said, here's what Sam said. He said, the pleasure was all mine. I talk about the revolution, but you live the revolution. So thank you, Sam. That's really great. Another thing I was going to say, Sister Nancy, she talks about me having to do more work. Sister Nancy has been up watching the coronation since 5 o'clock this morning. And now she's in there. She's probably giving them hell down there at the Kentucky Derby. She's going to be at the Kentucky Derby. And her horse damn well better win. It'll be hell to pay down there, I'm sure. And I was just like, this is just, they'll never hear the end of it if her friggin' horse doesn't win. After all, she told us what a scratch was, a horse scratching. And then the bitter ender, he explained it in more detail what a scratch was. And I'd like to make a quick point. This goes back to the second hour with Sam. We're talking about Leslie Borey here. And it fits perfectly with what Sam Dixon talked about. And this thing I've read, it took me about 3 minutes to read this article from a 1992, and then they later did read it in 2005, a letter from the police and military against the New World Order, where Colonel James Buck Wrights and Officer Jack McLam were integral parts of that organization. We're reading all about this polite stuff, how the sheriff started, how the Magna Carta, all these wonderful things. And Sam basically said, like, I'm just an old stick in the mud. But it boils down to this. And Leslie Borey is living proof. Constitutions, Magna Cartas, it's great. It sounds wonderful. If we had angels in our government, it would be great. But and then this is the point. Leslie Borey proves, just like so many other patriots we've had here in this country, that law and government is nothing but force. Sam said, it's power. Well, same thing. I say that my definition, when I talk to the law students downtown, when I'm on my run, I ask these little airheads down there. They're in the law school. I said, hey, you're going to force school, aren't you? And they look at me like, well, I guess they're right. I'm halfway an idiot. But law is nothing more than force. And without the gun, Mao Zedong said that law, that government, power comes at the end of a gun barrel, and that is so damn true. And this last comment, if we the people cannot maintain our right, we only have a right to guns if we can keep them. We don't have a right unless we can keep them. We don't keep the guns, we're going to lose everything. And I got to shut the hell up. I've already talked too much. Go ahead. I guess it's back to you, Bitter Ender, because I think Monica was ready to pass the ball to you, if I'm right. Go ahead,
Bitter Ender. No, she had one more thing she wanted to cover after the break. We'll turn it back to Monica.
Go ahead, Braveheart.
This segues beautifully to what you just talked about with guns and force and whatnot, because a sentence I read out of Leslie Borey's letter, and I'm going to just say this again, he is saying in the middle of the... I had a rifle pointed at me with a scumbag yelling conflicting instructions at me. So just think about that. He's getting conflicting instructions yelled at him, and there's a rifle pointed at his face. And these guys are jacked up on adrenaline at this point, even though Leslie Borey is an unarmed man just coming home from work. And they've got a squad of these armed guys, a SWAT team, right, to arrest him, a peaceful man who uses words. He does call himself a politician, remember, meaning he has run in elections. He has never been elected. He has run in many elections as an independent candidate so that he is not bound by some party's, definitions of what they deem correct to say or incorrect to say. He has basically called it as it is. And defines, you know, the world as it is. And this, so he is still a politician using words. Okay, so that's how he defines himself, as an honest politician, probably the only one around, right? And I mean, maybe there's a few others, but they tend to get sidelined. So just think about it. This guy has a rifle pointed at him, and these guys are yelling conflicting instructions, meaning that he cannot obey all their instructions at this point with a gun pointed in his face. So then what? These guys jacked up on adrenaline could very easily, you can see the scenario playing out, right? Need I say anything more? I mean, and then afterwards in the press, they'll just say, oh, well, he didn't do this or that when we told him to. And so this was just self-defense. We had to shoot him, you know? Go ahead.
Yep. No, that's exactly right. You know, the police carry a drop gun that has no registration on it. And they could pitch that gun down on the ground and say, well, he pulled this gun on us and we had to defend ourselves. And it's all a lie. It's a government lie. That's the way they have the whole system. It's rigged, and that's the way they have it set up. And the way they, you know, arrest somebody for a nonviolent crime, are you kidding me? Send a SWAT team and dogs, and they probably had a helicopter flying around. Well, for the news media, they provide the helicopter for the news media to fly around. And for a nonviolent crime, it's like that Roger Stone that was an associate of Donald Trump's. They sent a team in there. It looked like they were going after Al Capone and Bugs Moran together. You know, it's ridiculous but it's a show of force. It's for intimidation and to scare all the nobodies out there. The peasants don't even think about standing up to the imperial empire, because this is what we can do to somebody that's relatively famous or well off financially. And I just think what we can do to you. So that's the whole government system there. It's force and intimidation. So that's what we have to deal with.
You hit that on the nail on the head with the show, and it's intimidation for sure, but it also affects all the neighbors and anybody else who might be witness to this, because they suddenly think, wow, there must be a really dangerous man living over there, you know?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so I'll continue here with his letter, unless, Eddie, you wanted to jump in with something, but I'll carry on otherwise.
That was really great.
Yeah, he says, please pass on my highest and warmest regards to your brave, defiant brother, Alfred, who spent 4 years in prison for exposing people who want to kill all the non-members of their hateful syndicate in the world. And he nails that, too. That's what Alfred spent 4 years in jail for, because he exposed those people who want to kill all of us. And then he goes on to say, I say the hoaxers should take a knee for honest Canadians and innocent Germany. Soferim 15 is the passage in the Talmud, and I hope I'm saying that right. I'm reading his handwriting. I think it's Soferim 15. It's in the Talmud. It says, that's the passage that says it all about bankers who enslave the world with the debt, with the new debt, or sorry, more debt than money, and interest charging banking system, and in other words, usury. It says it all about a lying, hatred, inciting, and murderous media who used the term COVID denier to incite hate against people who opposed the vaccine mass murder of the majority of the world's population. So far, only millions have been murdered and billions have been injured. So we'll see if the majority will have had their lives shortened, in other words, murdered, or if the rest have gotten placebos. I see the summation of events like this. Soferim 15 motivated bankers hired like-minded scientists and doctors, those two words are in quotation marks, to invent, promote, and vouch for harmful injections and COVID measures. Bankers bought the media and used it to create fear and hate to coerce people into complying with COVID measures that included the forced vaccination of people with threats of physical violence and a violent death resulting from poverty. And that's a good place for a pause, and I do hear the music.
Well, dear Blood River Radio family, we'll be right back to Miss Monica, our sister Braveheart, as soon as this commercial break is done. See you in a few minutes.
Across the land. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
USA News, I'm John Schaefer. President Biden is defending his son's business dealings ahead of possible federal charges. In an interview on MSNBC, Biden said,
"First of all, my son's done nothing wrong. I trust him. I have faith in him. And it impacts my presidency by making me feel proud of him."
The Washington Post has reported the U.S. Attorney's Office in Delaware is looking into Hunter Biden's business dealings in China and the income he received from serving on the board of the Ukrainian energy company Burisma. Texas Governor Greg Abbott is sending quick response teams to his state's southern border ahead of Title 42 expiring on Thursday. Abbott is expecting a huge surge of illegal immigrants to stream across the border once the COVID-era policy is no longer in effect. A statement from his office reads, "Operation Lone Star continues to fill the dangerous gaps left by the Biden administration's refusal to secure the border." The World Health Organization says COVID-19 is no longer a global health emergency.
Director General Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus agreed the international public health emergency should be wrapped up. In a conference Friday, he noted the pandemic's been on a downward trend for over a year. He said this trend has allowed nations to return to life as they knew it before the pandemic. The WHO had declared the coronavirus outbreak as a public health emergency of international concern back in January of 2020. The U.S. is set to have its COVID-19 public health emergency expire May 11th. I'm Karen Sloan.
The favorite in this year's Kentucky Derby has been scratched. Forte will not be racing due to a bruised foot. And the writer's strike has entered day five. That strike has brought Hollywood TV and film production to a halt. At issue for the writers is improved pay in the streaming era and a guarantee they won't be replaced with artificial intelligence. This is USA News.
So, you need life insurance, right? Protection for your family? But who has time to meet with an agent? You're busy. But what if there was a better way? A way to protect your family, your loved ones, make sure you can send your kids to college, keep the family home, no matter what happens? Well, you can. With no agent visit, no medical exam, no blood work, none of the stuff that makes life insurance a hassle. Go to ethosliferadio.com. That's ethosliferadio.com. Ethos Life Radio is a 100% online buying platform for life insurance powered by Ethos. We match you after a simple online interview with a life insurance policy that matches your needs at the best price. EthosLifeRadio.com shops your policy to over 100 carriers instantly to get you the best price. And best of all, EthosLifeRadio.com is a marketplace. This is not a lead source. Your information will not just be sold with endless emails, calls, and texts. We give you the opportunity to buy life insurance online. Simple. In less than 15 minutes online. With no medical exam if you qualify. Do the right thing for your family today. Go to EthosLifeRadio.com. EthosLifeRadio.com.
Excuse me, Captain. I know this may sound silly, but can you fly?
Nope. Never had a lesson.
Yes, indeed, you magnificent.
Dear Blood River family, if you can, send chocolate to Monica and the Bitter Ender to the Braveheart. I've been eating chocolate. They didn't get any. I'm being boycotted by FedEx and UPS, so I guess I'll have to send them Pony Express or something to send chocolate to them. But anyway, I guess we're going right back to the still Bitter, Bitter Ender. I think Miss Monica, Miss Braveheart was going back to him. So go ahead, Bitter Ender.
Well, we were kidding Monica during the break right prior to the show. She was talking about that they had a big fire up there in Alberta, and she was sitting out on her back porch and watching the flames up in the mountains. So I was giving her a hard time. I said, well, I didn't think the snow melted in Canada until July or August, somewhere along in there. And I tell you, my first introduction to Canadians was when Nashville got a minor league hockey team back in the early 60s, the Dixie Flyers. And then all of the guys on the hockey team were from Canada. They didn't have the Russians or the Finns, or very, very few Americans were playing in professional hockey then. So that was my very first introduction. And my brother was the athletic trainer with the team and used to go down there and try to skate, wobble around on the ice before they got dressed and got out on the ice. And just some super, super great guys. And one boy, Ron Heinsohn, that was almost my age, and So he was telling me he'd gotten a date with an American girl, and they'd gone out on a date. And she asked, she said, well, what kind of cars do you drive in Canada? Like, you know, they don't even have cars in Canada. And he said, oh, we don't have cars. We have dog sleds. And she said, dog sleds? I said, how do you get around in the summertime? He said, oh, we put wheels on them. And she bought it. How little Americans know about any other country. So that was always a standing joke every time I'd see Ryan. I'd say, hey, you got your dog sled parked outside the dressing room there. You're going to have to go move it. So we had a good time kidding about that.
You're talking about hockey.
Great bunch of guys.
Talking about hockey, bitter inner. I'll chime in here just a second. There used to be an old adage that fellas said, I went to a fight and a hockey game broke out.
Hey, you got to be tough to play that game. And
this, I heard you fight, got to be tough.
These boys, it is. It's really a great sport. I always enjoyed going, and then finally Nashville got an NHL team here. So used to enjoy going to that, but it's turned so politically correct now. All they can talk about in their advertisements are diversity this and diversity that, and they're pandering to the arena down there where they play seats 17,000, and they're pandering to four blacks that are in the audience. That's all.
My God.
And they throw this diversity garbage in your face all the time. I said, let's concentrate on winning a Stanley Cup. How about that? Why don't we do that? I mean, that's what they're paying you for. But anyway, that's getting off the subject there. That's one of my.
Yeah,
well, I've never seen a black hockey player. Have you ever seen a black hockey player? I know I'm getting y'all off.
Yeah, there are a few.
There are a few.
The NHL made a rule at one time. Every team had to have at least one on the team, and it was so obvious why this guy was on the team that he looked like he was out there on roller skates where the rest of them were on regular skate blades. But he was a minority, and they had him on the team. And so, you know, I think they've kind of gotten away from that now. It was kind of embarrassing that they had to take a bunch of players that really weren't up to a professional NHL level. And there were a few good ones. Grant Fuhr that played for the Oilers, and there were a few others. It was just so obvious, like this Bubba Wallace in NASCAR that they keep trying to get a black driver in NASCAR. And, you know, and the way they bend the rules to let him lead the race or even win a race, it's just ridiculous how they go about doing that. So to me, that's insulting to the blacks. It's like saying you can't cut it, but we're gonna fix the rules to make you look good. And so, you know, it's
exactly. Affirmative action and quotas, all these things. You're absolutely right, Gene. It's an insult to those that these programs are supposedly trying to help, and of course, by its very definition, it's going to lower the standard of whatever it is that you're conducting
Absolutely.
This affirmative action for, because you're getting these people into something not based on merit, but based on either their color or their, you know, 105 genders or whatever, you know, like it's not based on merit anymore.
And it's so obvious to people that have any kind of common sense and that can actually speak out and say something. And the only way they keep this going is through, once again, we go back to intimidation and threats. Because if you speak out, you're going to be fired, even though you're the best person in that company, most productive, hardest worker. You mention something like this and you're gone. And they'll put somebody in your place that's totally incompetent, but they know to keep their mouth shut, or they're a minority, and they know that they can't be fired from that position. They can, you know, slough off and do practically nothing, but they know they can't be fired. So that lowers productivity as well, and it just reinforces the stereotype that these people are incompetent. So,
it's a lose-lose situation, isn't it? But they do keep it going with the guilt cult, with the lies about, you know, what are the reasons why supposedly these people are not doing as well as they might. And then, of course, the guilt cult on the white people, the white race, and, you know, formerly predominantly the guilt cult of the German people, which still continues to this day. But, you know, by extension, now all white people are responsible for everything bad. And then if you start arguing, well, why do you still have affirmative action? When, and they say, oh, it's because they've been oppressed. And you say, well, wait a minute, we've had several generations of, you know, the conditions of they're not being oppressed. Oh, but, it, you know, they're still, like, it's still whitey's fault always if other groups of people don't seem to do as well in certain fields or whatever. It's always whitey's fault, right? So
yeah,
it has to be bolstered with continuous lies and whatnot.
Exactly. And that just continues on and on. The old expression they had in the Marine Corps was, if you can't hack it, get a racket. And this is their racket. So it's just such an obvious thing that you can't say anything about it, though. That's the insulting part of the whole thing. And we had a discussion just last week with somebody that's a little bit younger than I am. The federal courts came up with this brilliant idea in Nashville and quite a few other cities as well back in the 70s to take the integration wasn't working. You know, they integrated areas where they had integrated schools, and the blacks were still definitely behind the whites. So they decided, well, they needed to take more of them out of the black part of town, roll them out of bed at 0:30 in the morning, put them on a bus, drive them all the way across town, and plop them down in a white school, in a practically all-white neighborhood. And then they take the white kids, bus them all the way across town, and drop them off in an all-black school in an all-black neighborhood. And they thought just by sitting next to white students in an all-white, what it had been, an all-white school, it was going to automatically turn these blacks into nuclear physicists and neo-surgeons, And, of course, it didn't work. What it did, it caused white flight out of the schools, and it absolutely destroyed the public school system in Nashville, which at one time was a darn good system. Because they couldn't see the sense in having to drive all the way across town. And what they lost even more than the students were the parents that supported the school. Because the parents weren't going to go over into North Nashville, black part of town, at night. I mean, you were taking your life in your hands. And so when they needed parents to be the band boosters or the 12th man on the football club, 12th man, and all these things that these parents had been doing to support the school, they lost all of that. And so the camaraderie and the community school and that feeling of, yeah, it's our community against those rotten dogs over there in the next school district over there, it's our big rivals, they lost all of that. And so it literally just killed the public school system, and tons of these private schools sprang up in Nashville, and that's what got a lot of them started. We had, you know, a couple of old, real old boys' school and a couple of real old girls' schools and Catholic schools, but that's what started all the private schools, and then it started the flight out of Davidson County to the surrounding counties that had enough sense not to do that. And so another brilliant move of the federal government to come up with school busing that just wrecked the school system. And it hasn't recovered. Now it's about 90% minority, black and Hispanic and whatever. And the whites have just left the public school system.
Wow.
Well, there's the old music, folks. When we come back, we'll have to get the bitter end. Or also, maybe you can tell us, bring us up to date with what's going on with the Forest Home. If you get through that, maybe we can cover Ron DeSantis was back in Israel again. Be right back, folks.
Do you know what is great about America? Ask an immigrant. Ask an Immigrant is a new podcast dedicated to helping Americans, especially our youth, value, appreciate, and be grateful for the freedoms we have here in America. Join host Lydia Wallace Nuttall as she interviews immigrants from around the world to discover their inspiring personal stories about why they came to America. To learn more about why America is the most prosperous, greatest country in the world, download the Loving Liberty app or go to lovingliberty.net.
as Attorney Jason Robb, General Counsel of the Knights Party based out of Harrison, Arkansas, and proud supporter of Blood River Radio. I, like you, am concerned about the destruction of our beloved America and our racial kindred people and our cherished liberties. As an individual and as a nation, liberty is what we seek. Liberty is important. It is what allows us to be independent, and if properly used, liberty allows us to fully worship God in all areas of life. And with that worship comes more liberty. We are on the verge of anarchy in this country, and personal liberty is looked upon as a crowning achievement of the people. However, Christianity and white law and order is viewed as the enemy of this newfound freedom, and that is why it is under attack. Learn more by listening to Blood River Radio every Saturday from 4 to 6 p.m.
In the medical field, IT security is crucial. Our highly skilled consultants are HIPAA certified and have 20 plus years of experience servicing medical clinics, billing and supply companies. We offer comprehensive endpoint protection, guarding your computers and servers against all stages of threats. And with our 24/7 monitoring services, you'll never worry about extensive downtime again. Ready to level up your IT support? Call 801-706-6980 today and discover how great IT services can be with Managed IT Services.
What we've got here is failure to communicate. Some men you just can't reach.
Well, some men you just can't be reached. I think we got two of them on this here program tonight. The still bitter ender and the bombardier, the bumbling bombardier. We can't be reached because we ain't got no education. Anyway, we're going to go back to my little sister, Jean's little sister, Braveheart. Go ahead, Braveheart. Finish up that letter you're talking about, sister.
Yeah, I'm not going to read the whole rest of it, but there's one part here that still is really important to talk about, because this was pure communist rollout. And we're talking about when they did all the measures at the beginning of this scamdemic, plandemic. And again, this is from a political prisoner. He's in prison because he sees the picture very clearly and he speaks about it. That's why he is in prison. So he outlined things very well, how things work. But I'll just read this one little part here. The bankers printed the money and sold it to governments all over the world to fund the payouts to people who were forbidden from traveling to work, resulting in the appeasing of people to prevent revolts. So that's what he wrote. Do you remember? I remember it very well. It was within the first few days of this pandemic back in early 2020. And our prime minister, and probably you had the same thing going on in the States, but prime minister scumbag, sorry to say that, but no, I'm not sorry to say it, Trudeau. Anyway, he said, and I heard this with my own ears, and all my red flags just went popping up when he said, money is no problem here. We're going to help people, you know, but you got to all stay home. You all got to stay in your homes. Don't go to work. Don't do this. Don't do that. But don't worry. We'll give you some money. We've got lots of money. Don't worry about the money. And I thought, whoa, there's something wrong with this picture. You see this? It was... That's pure communism. Don't work, but we'll give you all some money, the basic level of support just to keep you appeased. And it's really true that if people hadn't have received that nice little CERB, when is the paycheck, one of those things that they call CERB, what was that standing for? I can't remember now, but CERB. And, paying people lots of money to basically not work, and that did keep people from revolting, don't you think?
Well, it's like the old Soviet Union.
Or pay off, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's exactly. He writes some more about the banks, and he has a very clear understanding of how it all works. But anyway, over back to you. You wanted to talk about some other things there, I think. Go ahead.
Go ahead, Gene.
Oh, okay. Eddie, we'd talked earlier in the week. Before we run out of time, just want to give our listening audience some information on an event that we have every year at the Nathan Bedford Forest Home down at Chapel Hill, Tennessee, which is about 40 miles south of Nashville. We have the Forest Homecoming and Southern Heritage Festival, and like I said, have it every year. It's always the third Saturday in June. which this year will be on Saturday, June the 17th, and runs from 9 till about 4, 4:30 in the afternoon. And we have food and drinks. We have music. We have history lectures. We need to get Monica to come down. She'd be the star of the show.
Sure would.
Play for us there.
Settlers
that have books, flags, and other food items. We have a silent auction. We have Forrest T-shirts and memorabilia. And this year we've got quite a few prints from the artist David Wright. And he's done quite a few paintings of Confederate heroes like Forrest and Lee and Jackson, Longstreet, Mosby, and Jeb Stuart. And it's really kind of like a family reunion. We have people come back every year from Alabama and East Tennessee and up in Kentucky. And just, it's a great Southern event where people can get together, and they've got Confederate flags all over the place, and you don't have to apologize to anybody. You don't have anybody whining about it. It might be offensive or something like that. It's just a great day out there. And oh, and we have reenactors firing cannons, and we can have cavalry and infantry out in the field out there behind the house. And they do a demonstration in the morning and one in the afternoon. So it's a lot of, you can learn a lot of history. You can get a lot of good information. You have a chance to get, pick up on some books and things like that. And it's just a fun day to be out on, and you know, it's not too hot yet in Tennessee. And so we hope people will take the time to come by there and make some new friends, and a chance for old friends to get back together again. So hope you can come up there, Eddie, maybe sometime, and broadcast from there. We'd love to have you do that. That'd be a lot of fun.
Man, I want to come real bad. I tell you, I've been wanting to go there for years. This year, I think I'll look at my calendar. I don't have anything that I know of that that date, the third Saturday of June. I'm really looking forward. It would be great.
We'll cut you a special deal. We'll take 10 cents off of a ticket if you come. So.
Well, that's more than last time. Last time was 5 cents. Maybe if we could get the Blood River Radio sisters up there, man, that wouldn't that be great? But if they come, they have to bring chocolate.
Gosh, that's it. So would be wonderful. Love to have them come.
Really looking forward to that.
It's always so refreshing to be amongst people who you don't have to explain everything to. You're speaking the same language already. You've got the same kind of a basic knowledge about what's going on in the world. Isn't it just so refreshing and rejuvenating to be at those kind of gatherings where you can just, you know, have great conversations without having to, you know, explain everything or deal with incredulous people who think you're crazy or nutty? That's my experience with that kind of thing.
I had a call. It's funny. I had a call one time from a young lady at New Mexico State University, and she was writing a paper on General Forrest and wanted some information. She was trying to get something that was going to be the truth, and I later found out they wouldn't accept her paper because she told the truth. But anyway, she was asking about that homecoming event. She'd heard about that, and she said, "Have you ever had any problems?" And this year will be our 21st one. And this was back about the 15th or 16th one we had. And I said, "No, we really haven't." Said, "First of all, it's not in Nashville or Memphis in a big city. It's out in the country. And we're very supported by the government in Chapel Hill and Marshall County down there where it is." And I said, "You know, it really wouldn't be a good idea to come out there and start anything, because you've got cavalry, mounted soldier, horsemen that could ride you down and swing sabers at you. You've got artillery that fires, they fire blanks, but it wouldn't be hard to put nails or screws in those cannons and fire them. And then if anybody was left, you've got the infantry that could fix bayonets and come along and just impale you on the ground."
Yes,
so that would be not a good place to start an uprising or an unpeaceful demonstration. And then I said, "And I would bet you that 90 to 95% of those cars out there in that parking lot are packing heat. So not a good place to start something." But we've never had any problems out there with anything like that, because everybody's out there just have a kick back and have a good old time. And we do have security just in case. So, but like I said, in 20 years, this will be the 21st. In 20 years, we've never had any kind of problem at all. So it's just like Monica said, it's a great time to be together with friends and just, you know, you're not always constantly looking over your shoulder. Is somebody going to get offended because we're flying a flag, or we tell the truth about history, or the band plays Dixie or something like that. So great time. So we'll, hopefully we'll have some folks coming. And we have some of our good friends that usually come, Rich and Janice come, and Buddy and Patsy. They're there a lot of times. So like I said, it's we hope, Eddie, one of these years we can get you to come out there and broadcast from there. That'll be great.
I want to come. I sure want to come. I would love to. You know, old Matt used to have, old Matt Goodwin used to have this thing called a stinger. I'm very tech. I have tech no knowledge, like my grandfather used to say. He called it tech no knowledge. It's still technology. He made fun of it. I guess I'm like that. But he had this thing called a stinger that we could brought. It boosts. I heard Sam Bushman talk about it too. Boosts your internet, or if you don't have internet, you can use it. Maybe we could entice Matt Goodwin to coming down. And maybe he could do a broadcast with us, so we could he could bring that stinger and do his thing. And I think we could have a lot of fun up there. I really do. I'd love to come.
Well,
I want
now
to come
they
real
built
bad.
A new cell tower real close to that, and I don't have any trouble on my little Barbie phone making calls out of it. Used to, you had to be at a certain place on the property to get out of there to make a call, but now you can be anywhere on the property, and then that cell tower will pick you up. So that's an improvement that they've gotten out there over the last 4 or 5 years. So we're not that far out in the country anymore.
They don't have to pipe sunshine to you anymore, huh?
No. And you know, our carrier pigeons were getting old. They were kind of getting a lot of old gray feathers. They couldn't fly out with the information like they used to.
It's hard to get good carrier pigeons now.
That's it. Yeah.
Well, right. I'm flat looking forward to that. I can't wait to that. I really want to do that. Well, y'all, we don't have a whole lot of time left, but we have some. Would y'all like to cover? What do you think about this? We touched on it some in the first hour. We had House Speaker Kevin McCarthy. I don't know how much I got this during the show, during the last hour or whatever. House Speaker Kevin McCarthy hadn't been elected that long. You know, they got him by nook nor crook. They took about 6-7 votings. He was turned down to be Speaker of the House. He finally got in there some kind of way, probably blackmailed somebody. House Speaker Kevin McCarthy, Governor Ron DeSantis in Florida, went to Israel to fight this in law now, ensconced in law in Florida to combat further combating further anti-Semitism. I could go, we don't have enough time. I could read all the things that's considered combating anti-Semitism. For instance, putting out flyers, willfully harassing or threatening people, whatever. That's
do you mean putting out these hate facts? That's what you're talking about,
facts,
right?
That's
putting
right.
Telling the truth.
That's right.
Yeah,
telling the truth.
They say
exactly.
It's anti-Semitism if you tell the truth. That's their definition of anti-Semitism.
Yes.
Of course it is. And we could just call them hate facts. They don't like our hate facts, but they're facts.
Exactly. Well, you know, it's probably already rolling into the camp. Gene, how long is it going to be? Are we going to have those laws here in Tennessee like that, brother?
Yeah, they had something that in the General Assembly. I cannot remember if it did pass, but it's so vague. And that's the whole point of all this. They make it so vague. If you say anything they disagree with, then you've violated their hate law or hate
you
law
hit it
or whatever they want
exactly.
to call it.
Exactly. It has to be vague. Speech crime laws have to be vague because then they can nail you for. They cannot be specific. It's not like telling you must not rob a bank. That's very specific, right? Because it's a specific real crime. Whereas speech crimes, they cannot make them specific because they'll never nail you on it, but they can interpret these laws whichever way they want. Yeah, that's a very good point. They're very vague.
Yeah. Oh yeah, and they buy off the legislators and they buy off Congress. When Netanyahu, and this was several years ago, he got it before the Knesset or whatever they call that parliamentary body in Israel and said, don't worry about the American Congress. We own the American Congress. Not one of them let out a peep and said, buddy, you don't own me. So you know how that goes.
And he also said, and the American people know it. Well, people, that's the music. I can't believe this is the end of the program already. It's really been a great program. Thanks to the wonderful people we have in here. Thank you so much for coming on, Rand. Thank you, Sam Dixon. Thank you, Bitter Ender. And thank you so much, Braveheart. And thank you, Lizzie, for running the show. Thank you, Blood River Radio supporters, or there be no Blood River Radio. So God bless y'all. God willing, same time, same place, the 13th. I won't be here. Rand will be doing the show. I'll be having to work the festivals here in Memphis for St. Jude, but I'll see y'all the 20th. It'll be Rand running the show next week. Good night, everybody.